So let me
Okay, perfect.
first invite you to, share if you can share your thoughts on this important topic before we proceed with the rest of the agenda. And for the lost time that we have had in this glitch, we'll try to cover it up during our session. Thank you so much, and over to you, Maninder.
Okay, great. Thanks. I can assure our guests that this doesn't happen every day with us. They should not get a poor impression of the World Bank. We are usually these things run quite seamlessly. So sorry about the glitch. Great to have finally this very important discussion, and delighted to welcome our guests to this important event discussion and perhaps the start of a discussion. So as we know, this is it's a very important discussion for those of us connected. This is about nature-based solutions for rejuvenation of water bodies, and this is hopefully the significant crisis that looms on our planet, and certainly for countries in South Asia and across the world. We saw the story emerging from Cape Town last year, and we are told there are going to be more stories like that in the future. And we had the UN report recently, which showed a huge water crisis looming. So clean water and water that can be used for different purposes is at an even bigger premium than just water. And water treatment can be very expensive or complicated, or technologies are hard to deploy in different places. All the remote areas where people need water. And our ability to conserve, preserve, and revive water bodies and water sources is going to be of paramount importance in determining whether we as humanity and as certainly us, a subset of us as development professionals working on these issues, will be able to respond to this crisis. So, for me, this is I'm here to learn and listen. Ever since I had a great opportunity to talk to Ashish on this subject, I have been really fascinated by taking this work to scale. And I think that's what we all should try to focus on today. What I found particularly attractive as a layperson in this initiative is that it is nature-based, therefore it's clean, hopefully by definition. And it is affordable, and therefore it has the ability, and it's low technology. It doesn't involve a huge lot of operators and technology and machinery, and it's affordable. So therefore, it has the potential to be taken to scale. But for that to happen, it's not sufficient to just demonstrate the proof of concept, which I think we have, or our colleagues have already done, or they are very close to doing so, to everyone's kind of satisfaction, and pass the scrutiny that it needs to pass. But I think beyond that, it will require the ability of decision makers to recognize its potential and to be willing to give it a shot. And that's where I think we can come in. So that's what perhaps those of us in the room and those of us connected should focus on. We should use today's opportunity and perhaps a few subsequent conversations to really assure ourselves of the feasibility, reliability of this approach, and technology that is going to be presented and discussed. And if we are convinced that this approach has significant potential, perhaps we can play that role of bridging the gap between our friends here with us today, who are the researchers and pioneers in this work, and who are developing these nature-based solutions and technologies and are demonstrating the proof of concept. So the bridge between them and those who have the mandate and decision-making authority to apply and implement these approaches at scale. And many of those are our clients. Those are people we work with on a day-to-day basis. So that's the kind of role we can play. And what makes it a bit challenging is that, this is not about large dams or large infrastructure, which is usually more tempting and attractive for many of our counterparts to work on. So, I mean, unfortunately, we are more used to throwing huge resources and sums of money at challenges like this, and something as simple and relatively inexpensive might not catch the fancy of decision makers, which is ironic, but which is true. So I'm really hoping that today's discussion will serve the purpose of priming the pump, to use a water analogy, that it will lead to a more targeted follow-up discussion between our guests today and those of you who have the curiosity and interest, and which is further piqued by today's discussion, so that we can work together to help take this initiative forward. So I personally am very much looking forward to learning more about these nature-based approaches, and then also to brainstorm with you today and subsequently. Perhaps time will be short today, but once we have a good initial discussion, then we can have follow-up discussions on how to take this forward. So with this, I'm going to turn it back to you, Neha, and also a very warm welcome to Ashish, who I know well, and Madhukar, who I am looking forward to knowing and hearing today. Back to you, Neha.
Thank you so much, Maninder, and thank you for sharing those insights on water crisis mismanagement and why we need to work on finding innovative, pragmatic, and replicable solutions to manage and deal with this crisis that stares the South Asia region. Your thoughts and your push to make sure that we keep looking at and broadening our horizons, not only through our risk management work, but try and get these kind of pilots underway so that we can actually solve the real development challenges. Thank you very much for joining in and for those insights. Let me turn it over to Christoph for his opening remarks, and then we will start with the presentations.
Thanks much, Neha, and thanks, everyone. Good to be here and good to see everyone connected. So, good evening, right? Good afternoon, good evening. Glad to have you here with speakers from outside and colleagues here from Washington and elsewhere. So, this team here in India has always done a lot in terms of knowledge, in terms of innovation, in terms of talking to each other across the metrics, across the sectors and all of that. And I've already been part of a number of knowledge exchanges, because you do that, Neha, and colleagues and others, and the UB and everyone, but I've not been able to often be here physically or often also connect from Washington. So it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. In terms of the topics, right, clearly it's an important one. Both Neha and Maninder have just framed the issue very well and comprehensively and all of that, so I feel I've nothing to add, right? But because I need to justify my salary, I'm still going to say a few words, right? And basically just say a few words along the lines of what us in sustainable development, in particular at the bank, are looking at, right, and the way we see things, right, which applies, of course, to a number of countries and regions in the world, but very, of course, relevant here to South Asia and India in particular. And the story, goes as follows, right, which is that a lot has happened over the past 20, 30 years, a bit more, in terms of development, in terms of impact on improvement of human capital, improvement of physical capital, built-in capital. And when you look at the figures, this is quite impressive, right? And you see that the trends for the coming years are also quite impressive. But what's also impressive is that what has not followed, or what has not even maintained, what has gone actually in the other direction, is natural capital, right? Natural infrastructure. There's been degradation, and there are degradation of ecosystem services. A lot has been going in the opposite direction. And if we apply that to South Asia, and one of the ecosystem services, one of the deterioration of natural capital is, of course, the water stresses, right? And so that has been already well framed by Maninder and Neha. A big problem in terms of quantity, and not only because there are a lot of people needing and relying on water resources, right? Close to 200 million people here, this is not a little bit. And two is because the sources, right, in particular from glacier and all of that, also been decreasing a lot, right? And that's one of the feature of India and the region, which is the evolution of the glaciers and all of that. But also in terms of quantity, of quality, right? I mean, once you look at the percentage of water bodies that are polluted, and therefore water is not, cannot be used as such, right, by people and by the services, by the industries and all of that, this is very significant, right? We have up to 84% of water bodies that are polluted. And these are consequences, not consequences in 10 years, in 20 years, in 50 years, consequences now. Consequences for people, consequences for kids, consequences for the industry, for agriculture, for everything. So this is real, right? It's not something that we are making up. And the point here is that if you look forward, things are not going to look to get much better, right? When you look at the increase in production of the industry of agriculture. I was in Bangladesh, you know, last week, and we're looking at how many liters of water are needing just to produce one T-shirt, right? And there's quite a few T-shirts, you know, produced in Bangladesh, to be honest. So all that is actually, you know, when you look at the growth projection here in India. The government has a projection of 8% per year, right, of GDP. You need quite a little bit to get into that 8%, right? And that's going to require a lot of water. So moving forward, the development dynamics are such that the needs are going to increase, while at the same time, the supply is going to continue to shrink, right? And we've discussed a lot the climate change issues and whether it's going to be less water in terms of scarcity and all of that, or too much and too fast, you know, getting waters, you know, as well. So basically, things are not improving. And all that is affecting not only the use of water, but the broader ecosystem. And all that, when cumulated with land degradation and pollution of soil and all these type of things, and you combine all those stresses, it actually ends up with something very significant in terms of the impact on development processes. So therefore, what's the point? I think that the team here is basically wanted to get to a discussion on, well, have we looked at all the options, you know, in terms of the scale at which we can work, in terms of the cost, and Maninder has already alluded at it, right? In terms of the multiple benefit that are generated, right, by NBS, by natural based solution and green infrastructure versus, you know, the regular traditional things that we know how to do but are costly to build or costly to manage and all these type of things. And so this team is saying that, well, actually there are some innovative solutions. We know about it and we need to talk more of those. We need to not only pilot but scale up a number of those and all of that. So my understanding is that what we want to talk today is, where do we stand on that? What is that we want to say and what type of direction we want to draw, right? Which is very much aligned with what Maninder just said. So with that, thanks very much again, Nia and everyone. Thanks, Maninder, for taking the time to join and sharing thoughts and basically reflecting with your time and your, you know, engagement here, that this is actually of importance and a concern and a priority for the institution, right, across the board and all of that, not just from the India team or the SAR team and all of that. And that message, I think, is very important as well. So with that, Nia, over to you.
Thank you, Christoph. And I can clearly see that all these meetings that you're doing in South Asia is reflecting well on how you would want to push us more to get to, you know, more innovative solutions. Thank you. So without much ado, I'll invite our two speakers. Let me introduce Ashish Singh, who's an Indian entrepreneur and has 12 plus years of experience, particularly in the renewable energy and public infrastructure field. He has been working extensively on solar engineering, and has also worked with Tokyo Institute of Technology, Japan, and the Ministry of New and Renewable Energy, Government of India. In 2016, Ashish started a company called Imperium Earth Advisors with a vision to advise Indian infrastructure companies. And he has been promoting quite a few technology partners, and his current interest is in getting implementation of nature-based solutions get into the mainstream development. So welcome, Ashish, and definitely it's a privilege to have you here. The second speaker who Ashish brought us, and it's really encouraging, and we are awaiting to hear from you, Madhukar ji. Madhukar Swayambhu is a researcher, come environmentalist, ecologist, is very interesting profile. He has moved from IT to environment and clearly shows how environment and environment challenges are, you know, playing on people's mind. He has been consistently on the global top 10 authors on water by Smart Water magazine. He has written several articles on water, environment, pollution, ecology, has been delivering a number of lectures across national and international institutions. His profile is really very interesting and very long. And I'm sure all of us who want to connect with Ashish and Madhukar will find the details in the invite and the materials that will follow. But as of now, let me turn it to Ashish and Madhukar to share with us this interesting technology that we are all keenly waiting to hear.
So I think we are already short on time because of the technical glitch. So I can straight away start with the presentation. Right. So as everybody is aware, this is the day for talking about a nature-based solution for solving global challenges. There are multiple challenges across the globe. We have climate change, we have global warming, and so many of them, and everybody is aware of it. So we are just going to focus on how we solve it with our technology. The technology is called Cownomics technology. It's all about water, soil, and air, and how everything is linked. That we'll explore through the presentation. To begin with, as far as our recognition in India is concerned, we've been awarded by three different central ministries. The first is New and Renewable Energy, which has given us the ESG Enabler Technology of the Year Award for 2023. Second is Ministry of Housing and Urban Affairs, which has given us the Mission Partners for Amrut 2.0, which is Atal Mission for Rejuvenation and Urban Transformation. And third is the Ministry of Jal Shakti, which has given us the Water Hero Award. So let me just take you through the presentation. And how do we proceed further? Another technical glitch. This one. Okay. Finally. So water has got a huge role in the entire ecosystem. What where we go wrong is we actually take water as only water bodies on the surface, only as a pool or reservoir of water, whereas there is a lot more attached to the water bodies and water, right? So we need to understand the pivotal role of water in managing the environmental issues and solving the global problems, because everything ultimately is linked to water. Like we just heard, India is going to grow at a rate of 8%. But for this kind of a growth, there is absolutely no growth possible without water. So be it agriculture, or be it industry, be it human capital or animal husbandry or anything, nothing can grow without water. And in last about 400 years, the kind of pollution that we have generated, we have polluted soil, water, and air, all three of them together, right? So now we are at a stage wherein we need a technology to consume and digest the contamination or the pollution instead of segregating and collecting in what has been our approach for last 50 years, whether it is a sewage treatment plant or whether it is soil technology, whether it is air. Like in Delhi also, we have recently got a few of the smog towers installed, but that is only segregation and collection of the contamination. It's not consumption and digestion of the contamination. Why we are focusing on consumption and digestion of contamination is because into the nature, there is no concept of waste or wealth. Both waste and wealth are man-made concepts. In nature, everything is cyclic. So waste for one organism is wealth for another. Like one simple example is the bird. The bird, when it excretes, the excreta is toxic to the bird's body. It has to be excreted. So it is a waste for the bird's body. But if it drops onto the soil, it creates jungles. If it drops onto a water body, it creates planktons, which is again the feed for the fishes. So everything goes in a cyclic way. So restoration of this natural cycle is what is most important. And that is why the consumption and digestion of contamination will happen. So that's the natural process. Now, why do we need a nature-based solution is very important to understand, because natural cycle of production, rearing, and consumption is what is to be required to be restored. That is how the contamination or the pollution can be consumed and digested. Sewage water, as we know, or the wastewater, industrial effluent, whatever kind of wastewater we have, that's the biggest liability that we have on the planet for all the water bodies. And if we have to transform a sick unit into a profitable unit, the best approach that any economist will say is turn your liabilities into assets. So if the wastewater is the biggest liability, if we transform it into an asset, the problem will be sorted out, right? And nature already has a solution for this, because water body contamination and decontamination is a natural process. It's not that it is human dependent. Even if we wipe out the entire human population from the face of Earth, then also the water bodies will get contaminated because of natural processes. If there is volcanic eruption, water body will get contaminated. If there is hailstorm, if there is any seismic activity, everything is going to contribute towards pollution of the surface water bodies. And there is a natural process of decontamination. And we have all seen this during the recent global lockdown. All the newspapers, all the news channels have reported that water bodies have started becoming cleaner. What did we do? We just reduced the human intervention and nature reclaimed itself. So nature has got a process of contamination and decontamination of all the natural resources. We just have to understand those processes and define and design our developmental strategies in line with the natural processes. That is what we have done into our technology. So because nature comes to your support, your objectives are met much faster. You get much faster observable results and the gestation period is minimized. Like if we talk about, let's say, building up an STP plant, it's going to take at least a year's time. If you're talking about building a channel of phyto remediation, it's going to take minimum 9 months. By then, a nature-based solution can actually deliver a solution and the water can be restored. Now the question, obvious next question is, what exactly is the technology? So the technology is called Carbonomics technology and it doesn't really focus on cleaning the water, because cleaning of water is a natural byproduct. What we focus upon is resurrection of the native ecology of the water bodies in the wetland. So if the native ecology is restored, cleaning of water is a natural process. So if you try to delve deeper into resurrection of the native ecology, it basically means there is an active food chain inside every natural water body in a healthy condition. So there are single-celled organisms, there are planktons, there are more complex organisms like fishes and turtles and crabs, and their excreta is ammonia, and this ammonia is again neutralized by the single-celled organism. So this is the aquatic food chain which needs to be restored. The moment it is restored, whatever contamination is coming in, whatever pollutants are coming in form of wastewater or sewage water or industrial effluent or anything, that will be decomposed by the native microbiota and the nutrients will be utilized for production of planktons. So this is restoration of the cycle. Now, we need to understand how our water bodies are very different from what we perceive it to be as a reservoir or a pool of water. Every water body is a huge number of ecosystem service providers. So what are these ecosystem services? We have categorized it into two sections. One is the mitigation service, which is pollution mitigation in soil, water, and air, flood mitigation, drought mitigation, water and vector-borne disease mitigation. These are all the mitigation services provided by the water, surface water bodies. Then is the conservation service, which is biodiversity conservation, groundwater table conservation, livelihood, rural economy, socioeconomic development, and so many other things. So these are the services which are naturally provided by the water bodies. Provided we restore these services, the water stress will be sorted out on its own. Now, where can we do it? It can practically be done all across the globe. So far, we have shown it into standing and flowing water bodies like lakes and ponds, rivers and drains. We'll be covering it in further details into the case studies when we present the case studies. In India, we have done almost all across India, except for down south like Kerala and up like Kashmir. Rest, entire India has been done. Some or the other project has either been delivered or is ongoing or we have completed. So you can see almost all the states, MP, UP, Chhattisgarh, Punjab, Haryana, Delhi, Telangana, Maharashtra, Gujarat, West Bengal, Odisha, Jharkhand, and Assam. Yes, the seven sisters of Northeast are not there. So we have not got an opportunity to work there till now. But Assam, yes, we have done. So how much does it cost? The most important question for all the customers. So it is... Yeah, I'll come on that. That's there. So we are covering as the questions arises in most of our conversations. So it is very cost effective and easily deployable. We can meet the IS 2296 and 10500 standards for reusable water, and the water can be good for aquaculture, agriculture, and animal husbandry. That's a different chapter altogether. We can cover that in some other session. For now, the entire treatment is divided into 12 months. That is resurrection, restoration, and rejuvenation. I'll be covering in detail in the upcoming slides. So as far as the standardization and certification is concerned, we are ISO 9000, 14000, and 45000 certified. The apex body in India for evaluating a water-based technology or a water treatment technology is Sea Ganga, which is a consortium of all seven IITs. And they have also visited and certified one of our project in Varanasi. School of Planning and Architecture invites us for delivering a lecture on how to use ecology for the advantage of town planning. We've been certified by Punjab Pollution Control Board. The Central Pollution Control Board has invited us for a presentation on carbon sequestration through water bodies. And the other three certificates are the what I mentioned in the beginning of the presentation. The first one is this one is Jal Shakti Mantralaya. This is MNRE, New and Renewable Energy Resources, and this is Ministry of Housing and Urban Affairs. So if you look at the challenges from the water bodies, these are the key challenges: silt and sludge deposit across the globe. These are the same challenges: drying and drought. During peak of summer, the water bodies get dried. Weed and algal bloom, sewage and effluent discharges, biodiversity depletion with such kind of a polluted water body with BOD and COD so high, TDS and TSS so high, and DO at the minimal. Obviously, no biodiversity can be there to survive. And there is massive foul smell and mosquito population dwelling around the water body, flooding and water logging in the vicinity around the water body. The vector and waterborne disease outbreak, aquifer depletion, and saline aquifer. These are the common problems around all the water bodies across the globe. And the solution is restoration of the ecosystem services, which include almost everything that I covered in the beginning, from rainwater harvesting to carbon sink to air pollution mitigation. Everything is linked to the water bodies. So we start with the case studies. And the first case study is from Varanasi, which is protected body under Archaeological Directorate of Uttar Pradesh. This is the Kabir Prakatya Sthali, where Sant Kabir was found in 1498. Back then, it used to be a huge wetland of about 40-50 acres. But now it is reduced to a small water body of 12.73 acres. You can see how densely populated this entire area is. So one side there is Varna River, the other side there is River Ganga. And the flood water used to keep this entire wetland flooded with water. But after the rapid urbanization, it is grossly encroached. You can see a lot of water bodies around. Like this is a water body, this is also a water body. But these water bodies are separated from the main water body, and you have the dense colonies here. So the problem with this particular water body was untreated sewage from over 20,000 homes used to come into this water body. And it was actually considered as a collection of sewage instead of any kind of a lake. The water body used to get completely dried during peak of summers. This is the pre-treatment video. You can see all the stonework and beautification has already been done. But our concern is the water quality. Now, if you look at the water quality, you'll see that water is still, there are no waves, and there are patches of algal bloom and fungal growth all around. So I'll just play the video so that you can see it. So this is the condition before treatment, wherein there was a massive foul smell. I mean, no one could stand 2 minutes next to the water body. You can see there is no human being, there's no animal, nothing is around, right? The white patches that you see on water are the fungal growth, and the green patches are the algal bloom. You can see this newly built platform is below water. This is the pre-treatment condition of October 2021. We started the treatment on 19th of November 2021. There was massive mosquito population. The water body used to get completely dried in peak of summers, and it used to flood during monsoon. So this was the condition. And from there, this is the condition just within 3 days of the start of treatment. Both the videos are kept side by side so that you can observe the changes. The 19th is dark water. There are no waves. And the 21st, you can see waves all around. The color is lighter, at least 2 shades lighter. Right? And the water has started movement. This basically means that the water viscosity has started going down. When the viscosity goes down, the waves return back. And when the waves are back, it is no more a mosquito-dwelling colony because mosquitoes cannot breed in wavy water. They need a still water to breed in, right? So this, I'm covering this particular case study in a matter of weeks and days so that you are able to see the difference. Now, within 10 days, you can see the difference. 18th is 1 day before the start of the treatment, and 29th is 10 days after the treatment has started. You can see the top layer is transparent. You can see the bottom of the tank. Yes, there is a lot of sludge. There is a lot of organic matter, but at least you can see through the top surface of water. Whereas pre-treatment, you can see that was complete algal bloom and dark water. So it was complete opaque top surface. Now moving on, this is 2 weeks from the start of the treatment. The treatment, by the way, is done daily here. So 2 weeks means a difference of 14 days of treatment. Now you can see the water level is going down. So this platform, which was above water before treatment, after treatment, the water has started receding. This doesn't mean that the water volume is reducing. But the bottom sludge is getting consumed in the system. So when the sludge is consumed, the space is reclaimed by water, and the water from the top surface, when you look at it, it seems that the water is reducing. Actually, water is reclaiming the space, which is emptied by consumption of the sludge. Now, after 1 month, this was the headline created by Dainik Jagran, that for the first time in the recorded history, there was a lake in Varanasi which had a higher dissolved oxygen level than the river Ganga itself. And you can see into the comparative table that the dissolved oxygen level had gone up by 102% in a matter of 30 days. So although all the parameters have changed, like from DO to BOD to TDS, TSS, salinity has gone down by 80%. The fecal coliform count has gone down by 90%. But the highlight was created by the dissolved oxygen level. And now coming on to the summer of 22, as I said, the treatment started in November of 21. So this is summer of 22. The water body, which used to get completely dried. What happened to this? Yeah. The water body, which used to get completely dried in peak of summers, actually full of water. It was almost... there was almost 7 feet of water during peak of summer. And you can see the kids are, they've made their own boat by adding some pipes and drums. And they're boating around into the water body. They're swimming. They were catching fishes. The entire life was back into the water body. And this entire thing is done in situ. As per Uttar Pradesh Pollution Control Board, the daily inlet into this 12.75 acre water body was 10 MLD of untreated sewage. There is not even a single drain which has been stopped or diverted during the treatment. So this entire treatment is done in situ. And you can see the platform, which was earlier submerged underwater, is now free from water, and the water is almost about 1.5 feet below the platform. Now, on the embankment side also, you can see a good amount of footfall. The kids are sitting and there's various people sitting there. It is because there is no more foul smell, there are no more mosquitoes, nothing is there. So all the problems are already sorted out and people have started interaction with the water body. There is a behavioral change. There is a circular economy because the footfall has increased. So everything has taken its own shape without any further intervention. Fishes, I said, they're catching about many fishes every day. So now coming on to the scientific side of it, these are all the lab reports. Again, all reports are done by Uttar Pradesh Pollution Control Board. And you can see there is a difference in TDS, BOD, pH, COD, DO, and salinity, all on consistent levels month over month. Now, that was a lake. Now, moving on to another case study, which is from another part of India. This is Punjab. And this project we did with Punjab Pollution Control Board itself, which is an in-situ drain rejuvenation, which is actually a sewage drain itself. And this is in Patiala, Punjab. You can see the map location here. On one side, you can see there is a densely populated village. On the other side, you can see there is a sewage treatment plant, which is a government sewage treatment plant. Now, the sewage treatment plant used to discharge 9 MLD of treated wastewater, and the village used to discharge almost 9 MLD of untreated wastewater. The direct sewage used to get discharged into the same drain. Now, they had a similar problem, foul smell, mosquitoes, people getting sick and all that. Those were the standard problems, which was there with the drain also. Here you can see the entire channel. This was almost a kilometer long channel. And these are the points of intervention where we did the treatment. Now, as far as the treatment is concerned, the treatment is very simple. We have to study the water body first. We make a medicine which is 100% botanical extract, which is dependent on the study. Into the study, we have to take various things into account, like which agroclimatic zone it is, what kind of life is there into the water body, or if there is no life, what kind of inlets are there, how much of inlet is there, whether it is industrial effluent or whether it is domestic sewage, treated, untreated, or it is runoff water or storm water, or what kind of water it is coming in, and what kind of problems do people have. They have a foul smell problem or algal bloom problem or mosquito breeding problem. So we take all these factors into account while conducting our study. And after we have conducted the study, we make a medicine which is 100% botanical extract. We ship it to the location where it is amalgamated with fresh water from the same agroclimatic zone and poured into the water body early morning at the time of sunrise. During the day when sunlight is available, when the photons are there, these photons are available to the water body. This entire medicine is synthesized by the aqua ecology for research and the ecology. So that is the simple, straightforward process which from the deployment perspective, it is so simple that you don't even need any skilled people to actually execute the job. So that is why ease of implementation is there.